Welcome to Fred Bell's, Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show, coming at you live from Laguna Beach, California. Welcome to my Florida listeners down at Tantalk Radio all over Florida, making me the voice of Tampa Bay. Welcome to my listeners over in Miami. Everybody, I got a lot of friends over there. We'll be down there one of these days to see you. Those of you that have the live webcam attachment, just go to the front page of bbsradio.com and click on the live webcam, and you're going to see one heck of a sunset from up here in Laguna Beach. That's going to be kind of neat. And tonight's guest is one of the people that's going to be a presenter at the Sound Healing Center Conference in San Francisco, May 11th and 12th. And I think he's got half Tibetan. Anyway, tonight's guest is Jonathan Goldman. He's a musician, writer, and teacher. He is an authority on sound healing and a pioneer in the field of harmonics. Jonathan is the author of Healing Sounds, The Power of Harmonics, Shifting Frequencies in the Lost Chord. He has studied with masters of sound from both the scientific and spiritual traditions, including the Dalai Lama's chanting Gayatri and Gami monks who have been empowered by the chant master at Dipang Lusing. I'll let you correct me, at monastery to teach Tibetan overtone chanting. And he will actually do some chants. And he sent me some amazing albums here. He's out being a musician, Frequency, Sounds of Healing, Medicine, Buddha, it's a Divine Name, the Chakra Chant, which I guess that's pretty interesting. It says Winner Album of the Year, Best Overall in Meditation Healing, 1999 Visionary Award, and The Lost Chord. And I remember when we were traveling with the Moody Blues, we had an album out called In Search of the Lost Chord, which was pretty interesting. Now, I've been playing the Lost Chord CD, and I've been putting Pleiadian sounds on it, using it in the background, putting some Pleiadian lead sounds on it. I don't know if Jonathan approves of that, but I'd like to play this thing live at the conference. So anyhow, without any fooling around more here, let me introduce Jonathan Goldman. How are you doing, Jonathan?
Fred, it is a delight to be there talking to you, your parents, and all the extraordinary beings who are tuning into this broadcast from Tampa Bay to Laguna to all over the planet. We're going to have some fun tonight.
Preaching, yeah, a lot of places.
Yeah.
And the birds, and because it's sunset, you're going to hear some birds in the background tonight. This will feature some live raised parrots because they teach me. The best teachers I've had besides humans are parrots.
Well, you know, they had, yeah, you know, a brilliant TV show on, I think PBS, one of these things, fairly, yeah, recently about just the heightened intelligence that a lot of these creatures have. And parrots, indeed, are at the top of the list, up there with dolphins and stuff like that, you know?
You know, like when I play your music, they love it. They get real quiet and they listen to it, and then they try to sing along or chant with it, and that's no kidding.
Yeah,
my parrots. If they don't like music, they tell you right away, turn it off, basically. You know, they love your music.
Well,
and my parrots talk. They don't mimic. They actually talk. I mean,
yeah, I appreciate your parrot's taste in sonics. What can I say?
Yeah, and I've had them for like 20 years, all of them, so they can talk to me. If I ask them a question, if they're hungry, I'll say, "Are you hungry?" And they'll say, "Cracker." Not cracker. If they're not hungry, they won't say anything. If they see me putting my shirt on, getting ready to leave, bye. You know, they know I'm leaving. You know what I mean? They're so amazing.
They really are.
So I want to, well, my listeners are, I have thousands of listeners out there that are background freaks. And they know I don't bring normal people. This is not a normal show. And normal people aren't allowed here. This is only for the, if it's not on mainstream, it's on this show. And so all my listeners are backed out just as bad as we are. So could you give us a little background? Because they love background on people that are really, have background. You really have a lot of background.
Gosh, well, you know, what part of which lifetime in this particular embodiment on the planet should we start with?
Now, you remember the story of Lopsang Rama? Maybe but I think I'm not that much older than you. He was
No, I remember that. Sure, the third eye.
Yeah, and he was a Tibetan monk that woke up as an aerospace engineer over here in California. And suddenly he didn't fit anymore. And that was like one of the first guys back in the 60s to do that. And you sort of remind me like that. I think you were obviously a lama or something in a past life, because you can chant not only one monk. I've heard you chant two or three at once, out of your vocal cords, you know. So,
yeah, well, you know, I like
where's
to believe
the start,
that.
In other words, where did you get crazy? What happened to you, you know? How old were you, like 10 or 12 or 14 or what?
Well, I think that music and sound has always been a really powerful tool in my life. And then when I was, oh, gosh, I went to a film school at Boston University and then played in rock and roll bands there. And this was like in just the early 70s, you know, among other things, like the people that we shared a rehearsal space with, you might have heard of them, called Aerosmith.
Yeah, I know Aerosmith.
So, you know, we used to play with all these different people, and I continued doing it. And then I actually, talking about Florida, I went down to Florida for about a year and became one of the top disc jockeys in Orlando, came back to Boston, started a newspaper, then got back into playing in a rock and roll band. And then one night I had this really interesting experience.
Yeah.
I walked on stage with the rest of the band, and I looked out, and I became aware that the music that we were creating was helping induce an ambiance of negativity and violence. Now, no question that the alcohol or the other intoxicants that the people were imbibing in were also doing this, but I knew that the music that I was creating was doing something as well. Now, listen, I've been playing since I was 16 years old. When I was 16, my band beat out Bruce Springsteen in a battle of the band in New Jersey. That shows you how old I was.
Yeah,
and,
you're getting
I still am.
Yeah, you're
and,
still getting
so I've been playing for.
You're a guitar player. What do you play, by the way? Just out of curiosity.
Well, I play keyboards and mostly guitar. I'm really sort of a schooled in the venue of Jimi Hendrix and Stratocaster type of consciousness. And this, you know, maybe we can talk a little bit more about the aspect of sound as a healing modality now beginning to creep into mainstream. But what happened at my Fred was so interesting, because I was about 30 years old and I'd been performing professionally for probably somewhere around 14, 15 years. And it was just like, why did I have the thought about sound being used, you know, to make people feel better? That was really the thought. Why? I had a thought. What if sound could be used to make people feel better? The concept of actually using sound to heal didn't actually enter my psyche for a couple more weeks, but just the thought of sound being used to make people feel better. And I'm going to just do, like, you know, backtrack and say that I'm not now talking about, you know, rock and roll being bad for you or anything like that, but I am talking about the type of music that in the early 80s was considered the punk or new wave or, you know, really, really negative encoded.
I went through that with my daughter, who was young then, just starting out, like about 9 or 10, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is way different. And for, you know, a little while at that point when I began, you know, exploring it, I came across all these people who said, oh, rock and roll is the devil's music, or pop music is the devil's music, but in reality, some of the most spiritually uplifting music that we have is the Beatles, or you were talking about the Moody Blues. I mean, there was just some brilliant, brilliant music that was transformational, shifted our consciousness, and could be considered pop or rock music. So just because, you know, I specialize now in creating music that is really, shall we say, transformational and very, very deep and relaxing, but it's not the only type of music that can be used to change consciousness.
Right. Yeah, that's pretty amazing. You really got into it early and really saw what it did. And you know, we can talk also about how it changes the chakras and the endocrine system around and all of that.
Yes.
But now, you know, like, when did you start getting into the Eastern side of it? Because, you know, at some point you went off the deep end on the Eastern side of it. I guess some
well,
of us do that, you know.
This was pretty close to when after I had that revelation about sound being used to make people feel better, and then following this with the concept of using sound as a healing modality, what happened was I began to explore this. And mind you, this is in the very, very, well, this is over 25 years ago, and there were probably a handful of books and a handful of CDs out on, you know, that focused on using sound as a healing modality, and probably the major impetus at that time on this planet of either societies or traditions that understood about the healing power of music either came from Tibet or the Hindu tradition.
Yeah.
And so I began to explore this, and you know, something I usually don't talk about, but I am actually an authorized and initiated Hindu Swami, as well as being an empowered Tibetan chant master. So, I mean, you know, this is real stuff, and I'm also, obviously, as you are, totally fascinated by what we call the science of sound.
Yeah, well, when you started doing the chants yourself, did you pick up on that pretty fast? I mean, those, you know, the Aum chants that I heard you do. Did you learn that quickly? Or did that take a lot of practice, or are you naturally a singer? Or did you sing when you were playing earlier or not?
I sung in like kind of a Mick Jagger or a Howling Wolf type voice at best. I never did this. And what had happened was the Gyume monks, who are actually in Tibet, the oldest monastery on the planet. Now, I can't really say in Tibet anymore, because most of the monasteries in Tibet have been destroyed, and they're now, they're actually found in some of the back streets in Tibet, but most of the monasteries have relocated into India. But they have had, the Gyume monks, for example, the same chant for world peace going continuously for 500 years. So these fellows, these lovely beings, came over to, I was living in Boston, they came to Boston, and this is the first time they were out of India, and they were sort of touring, if you like, and presenting these what are called tantric chants, and tantric meaning the interconnecting web that unites all of reality. And I recorded them, and I woke up the next morning, I was listening to them in a meditation room, the special meditation room that I had, and I listened to the recording, and I woke up and I went, and I was like, wow, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, you do it well. You sound like about half a dozen monks.
Well, I mean, what's amazing is it usually takes most of these monks anywhere from many, many, many weeks of professional training to many, many, many years. And there I picked it up overnight, which is almost, if you like, you know, a magical experience. It's
well,
something
that's why they probably start to recognize you from your past lives as being one of them, right?
I'm friends with them, and I just like to try to, you know, not get too much into who or what I was in a past life, but what I can do now in this present life to help people.
Yeah, no, that's really good. So what all kinds of chants do you like to do anyway? I mean, can you explain the different type of chants? And first of all, I know that when I was studying with Tibetans, those temples, like when you were saying the chant never stops, they just do shifts, right? They just, there's a special room in the, well, explain it. It's a nonstop for 500 years, sort of like, right? They just keep alternating
Right, and, you know, this is almost a subject that I wanted to tap into later on in our conversation, but I'm hopeful that we as a species can actually do something like this in cyberspace on the internet. I'm in the process of working with a number of people creating what is going to be called the Temple of Sacred Sound. And this is going to be a cyberspace temple that people can sound along with other people throughout the planet, projecting energies of higher consciousness to assist the planet. And I think this is going to be one of the major keys of our evolution, so that we don't sort of go down the drain through all the silliness that many of us have been engaged in the last century, in terms of using, you know, fuels and trying to destroy us. And, you know, we've actually probably been engaged in this ever since mankind has been on the planet. But nevertheless, you know, using sound coupled with consciousness can be one of the most powerful tools for basically shifting and making change on the planet. In my book, my first book, Healing Sounds, I have a formula, Fred, and it's this.
Right.
Frequency plus intent equals healing. Now, frequency, sound travels as a waveform, so that frequency is, if you like, a metaphor for just the concept of sound. Intentionality is the energy that is encoded on the sound. And this, as a formula, came to me probably in the mid-80s when I was writing a book for Doubleday on using sound for healing. And I literally, Fred, had a stack of papers probably 2 feet high, and they were just different systems that different scientists, different spiritual masters had used for and were using for healing. And you'd have one scientist using one set of frequency to heal a specific organ, and you'd have another scientist using a completely different set of frequencies to heal the same organ. Or you'd have a spiritual master A who would be using one mantra for one particular effect, and you'd be using a spiritual master B using a completely different mantra for the same effect. And Fred, I come from, a little bit like you, from a family of scientists and doctors. And I said, God, there's got to be something going on here. And I don't understand how this can be, because there is a principle, if you like, of resonance in terms of using sound to resonate and vibrate specific portions of the body. But I knew there was something else going on if all these different people were having success. And all of a sudden, I heard an inner voice, if you like, say, it's not only the frequency of the sound that creates its effect, but also the intentionality of the person creating the sound.
Yeah, I think I just learned a big thing tonight on tonight's show. I never even thought about it. I know I'm real hot on, you know, orchestrating hormones to the brain by sound, but I never thought about the intention. That's a brilliant, you know, point to bring up.
Really, I think it's a real key, Fred, and you know, at the time that it came, it was like, you know, when I was living in Massachusetts, there was an expression, dawn breaks over Marblehead, which would be sort of akin to the light bulb going on over somebody's head, you know.
Right,
and when
when the
frequency plus intent equals healing came out, I was like, wow, this is really important. And
that explains, like, column being the sacred word of creation, because there was a ten of a higher authority to create, you know, he put the sound out there, or she put the sound out, or however you look at the higher authority,
right,
directed into Earth and the sun and the universe, etc. That makes a lot of sense.
Right. Well, you know, we've all experienced this concept of frequency plus intent equals, if you like, the outcome. You know, hopefully the outcome is healing, but, you know, most of us have all been at a party, and at some point in our life, and somebody that we might have had issues with will come over and say, hey, lovely to see you, and they'll say, lovely to see you, but you'll feel like you've been psychically slimed, because
yeah,
the word said something, but the intention.
Yeah, no, I that's a good point, because, you know, it's like the cold handshake where they're looking in the other direction.
Yeah,
know?
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And you're meeting somebody, and you know that they don't want to meet. They're just there because they have to be, and then their friend is introducing them to you, and you might as well not even touch them, because as soon as you shake their hand, they're off somewhere else anyway.
Well, yeah. You know, I think that, you know, a lot of probably our audience are aware of this. I mean, I remember years and years ago, and I'm not going to mention names, but watching a major telecast on TV of a really, shall we say, prominent political figure saying something, and I just immediately, my body immediately began to cringe and shake, because I knew this person was lying. The words were saying something. But our bodies and our electromagnetic field, our nervous system, actually responds to this stuff to the degree that there's something that I'm sure that you know and your listeners may know of called kinesiology, which is a way of using muscle testing.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, if something is good for you, your muscles will test strong. And if something is bad for you, your muscles will test weak. And if somebody is lying to you, or if a sound is not good for you, you will actually become weakened by this. And so, therefore, somebody can be saying something, they can be telling you how great you are and what a great thing this is going on, and yet physically you will start going weak, your nervous system will start getting all, you know, out of balance, and we know. I mean, we are a much more multidimensional being, even those of us who aren't aware of it.
Yeah. Now, you know, it's sad. There's a lot of, you know, like some of this heavy rap and some of this heavy music. Some of this stuff out there, to me, from my, what I've seen, because I've been in the music business too down here in L.A., and
mm-hmm.
I think stuff is drug-oriented sounds, you know what I mean? Like some of this music, I guess if you just took a big hit off a freebase pipe and you're coming down from that, you need to hear some of this stuff because it's so negative and so destructive. And, you know, so, I mean, that's that. I don't know what the intent was of the artist that creates that kind of music. I won't mention any names, but there's some artists out there that seem, especially in some of this gangster movie music, where there is an evil intent, and it causes a bad effect on people, and it causes their cravings to go for the wrong substances and not put good things in their body. That's, you know, I've seen more of that down here probably, you know, than anywhere else. I know, like, for example, when I go down in the South and work with my friends in Nashville, the country, I've always liked country music.
And, yeah.
I don't care if these guys singing, I spilled my beer on my girlfriend's head and she last night. It's still good, laid-back, crazy music. But some of this evil, you know, negative tantric stuff that comes out of the West Coast and out of New York, too, I mean, it's just, it's sad to hear that. But I guess everybody has to have their shot at it, you know.
I'll tell you a little interesting story, which is, because I think you've hit something on certainly the nose or whatever, hit it on the head or the tail or wherever part of the body you're talking about when it's the truth. But
yeah.
Years and years ago, I remember I was teaching in New York City, and a friend of mine who was a well-known lawyer introduced me to somebody who was at the time the head of A&R at Mercury Records. You remember Mercury Records? I don't know if this exists or not.
Very well. Very well. And, I got a lot of little 45s from there.
And this person was was having a lot of spiritual experiences, and what they were doing is they were working with an artist, and they were creating spiritually uplifting hip-hop or rap or whatever term you wanted to use.
Right.
And it was great music. It was really, really neat, but it tanked, meaning that nothing happened because, the people were not ready to accept positive music. They were just, it's a lot easier. I mean, no offense, but it's a lot easier to entice people with the idea of sex and, you know, violence and all that stuff. That's much more, enticing to them than talking about love and kindness and goodness and being able to expand and become part of the light. I'm hoping that we're going to be able to do this now, but, I mean, I'm not singling hip-hop or rap or whatever term you want to use. But, you know, you're right. A lot of these people are doing it. It's simply it's because of money, and it's because people are drawn to it. So that's the question. Is the hip-hop creating it, or is it simply symptomatic?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a good point because it's a two-way street. You know, it's like sometimes I would talk to when I was being a creating contactee, and I would talk to Simiasi, who was the one that I was working with.
Mm-hmm.
Made a point one day, you know, we were talking about Revelation and the end of the days, and she's in her. One of her points was, as we progress, you know, as hell and heaven empty out or whatever people perceive that to be. For example, in 300 years ago, there were a heck of a lot more people not on this planet than there are now. A lot less.
That's right.
Smaller populace, much smaller.
That's right.
You know,
my gosh.
Smaller. Yeah, so where are all these souls? Obviously, they were somewhere, you know. Whatever they, now they're all being gathered down here. And so as they're brought down, their energy is coming with them. So I think that as they come down here and incarnate in great masses, you know, they're bringing a lot of strangeness from strange places and a lot of goodness from good places. And I think that Revelation has a lot, and I'm not a Bible beater, but I just think there's a lot to, you know, how this is going right now in concert with how many people this planet can sustain before it, A, blows up, or we blow ourselves up, you know?
Well, I have a very good friend by the name of Greg Braden, and if you're not aware of his work, or if your listeners are not aware of his work, I really highly recommend it. He's a spiritual scientist who most recently wrote a book that I think may have made the New York Times top 10. Anyway, it's called The Divine Matrix, and he uses the term matrix to mean that interconnecting web that unites us all. I use the word tantra for that, not the sexual tantra, but the actual authentic word of tantra, the, you know, spiritual practice. But The Divine Matrix is the name of his book, and he talks about various experiments that have been done showing that we have actually the ability to co-create our reality together. And one of the things that Greg has, you know, in his work talked about, it actually comes from Carl Sagan. You remember him, the scientist?
Yeah, very much so, yeah.
Carl Sagan, who actually did the movie Contact, and he talks about us being Carl Sagan in our technological adolescence, which
right.
is that we're at the place now where we have, if you like, as you were saying, the technology to blow
right.
ourselves up. And what we need, what is mandatory, is that we have the feeling, the compassion, the heart-centered love to realize that we do not need to do this. It's a little bit like the, you remember the movie Jurassic Park?
Yep, I was over there. Yeah.
Okay, and you know, Jeff Goldblum plays the...
Where they filmed it. Yeah, I love it. Over, yeah, definitely.
Right, Jeff Goldblum plays the chaos scientist, and he makes a statement at one point. He says, you know, you scientists, and he's a scientist himself, of course, but he says, you scientists are so busy trying to see if you can create something that you don't ask yourself if you should create
yeah.
something.
Yeah, the spirituality versus the scientific ability.
Right, and the should aspect, and you know, I don't want to use that word, but that aspect, that comes from the heart. It comes from the inner knowing. Because, you see, if we are working from our hearts, then we would never be at war with one another because we'd realize that we are all one. But we're not. We're working from, you know, you're talking about the chakras, from the solar plexus area, the area of power, and from other places so that we need to control other people. And this is going to do none of us any good.
I know, and just think about the sickos that created, you know, gas warfare, you know, tear gas, mustard gas,
right.
all the gases, all the bio-warfare stuff. There's some pretty sick people out there need a lot of sound healing, you know what I mean?
Well,
and
the bottom line is,
I think now that some of these idiots are starting to wake up, you know, and of course then we got the ones like, you know, in the Virginia school shooting and the shooting in Nats yesterday. Those idiots are always around, but I think there is a waking up process for some of them that did some of these bad things, and I think they probably want to turn their lives around a little bit. I would think
this waking up process is mandatory for ourselves as a species on this planet, because if we don't, we're going to just do stupid stuff, because humans, since the beginning of time, whether we're talking about A-bombs or he or she who's got the biggest rock, they still have, you know, basically either been throwing rocks at each other or clubs at each other. You remember 2001 when they, you know, the club goes in the air and turns into a space station, but it's technology progressing and still that concept of us being in our technological adolescence where we have the ability to create the tools but not the consciousness or the awareness of how to create and use these tools the right way.
Yeah. Now that we're talking about them, can you explain to everybody some of the stuff that you've created? I mean, I've got a stack of stuff. It's going to take me a while to go through it all, you know, but it's brilliant. I really appreciate you sending me all these things. These are amazing.
Well, it's my pleasure. That was just a small little bit. I've got over probably close to 25 recordings that I've done now, and I like to believe that all of them have never been manifested on the planet before in terms of ideas, like the concept of the chakra chants, which you mentioned before, which won the Visionary Award for not only the best healing...
Yeah, and then you got the album of the year, best overall, you know, meditation and healing album on the chakra chant.
The Visionary Awards are a ceremony done by this organization called... it's what's called the New Age Trade Show, and they're literally probably almost everybody in the New Age field submits their stuff to these awards, and this one was picked up, and then my stuff continuously gets picked up. It's not the Grammys, because the Grammys, God bless them, and you know, I had a Grammy nominee last year, but a lot of what the Grammys focus on is you know, mainstream music and including hip-hop, etc. But this stuff is just purely focused in on the higher consciousness and the New Age stuff. So it was a real, real, real honor to be chosen for that. And that was the result of Chakra Chants was the result of my having, you know, I was telling you about this pile of papers that I had on my desk that was about 2 feet high, and I was using a DOS operating system on my computer. I don't
remember
know if you're old.
That was some old stuff.
Right, the amber flashing letters on the black screen. You remember that? God.
I remember.
But, yeah, so that was where the Frequency Plus and 10 came from. And, you know, people would begin to put out these different recordings for the chakras. And,
yeah.
You know, you'd hear like one tone, here's a tone for the root chakra, here's a tone for the next chakra. And I just found it really boring and ineffective.
But I was going to say, your stuff's not boring. Not at all. Your stuff's not boring. Most of it is very boring. Yeah.
And I thought, well, gee, what would happen if I began, number one, to combine a number of these different systems? And one of the things that I found is that a lot of the sacred systems of sound from different traditions will work together. So I did that, and I basically spent quite a bit of time, and almost everything that I do, Fred, is an experiment.
Yeah, now, before you get off that, I just want to, this chakra chant, I'm looking at the back of this thing, and you've got all, you start at the base, sacral, navel, heart, throat, brow chakra, even the right. Titles. I like your titles, primal ground for the base, sacral is sacred union, navel is solar fires, heart is wings of the heart, and throat, spirit voices, brow, mind's eye, and then the crown of creation. I mean, those the titles are even brilliant here. Yeah,
well, thank you.
Yeah,
and
I
that
mean,
one
you really, you live, you're living this trip. You're not just talking about it and playing. You're living this.
Well, a lot of people think I'm a pretty creative person, and, you know, as I said, I went to film school, played music. I completed my first novel when I was, like, you know, 14 years old. So, do music. Not only do I do the music, but I don't know how many pages the liner notes are with the chakra chants, but I bet you they're anywhere from 16 to 32 pages of liner notes.
Wow.
Because I want the people who are listening to this also to get an education and really begin to understand how sound can be used to heal and transform.
Yeah. When you get up to the healing conference, are you going to be playing some music too? Are you going to be playing up there or lecturing, or what are you going to be doing?
Well, it's a possibility. I'm not real sure. I'm there to support Dave Gibson, who is putting this whole thing on. And, you know, if the opportunity presents itself, I'll be taking part in this show on Friday night that we're co-producing. I do a lot of teaching, Fred. A lot of teaching, and to the degree that we have a 9-day healing sounds intensive that takes place in the middle of July, and every year we're always like totally filled, booked with a waiting list, etc. But, you know, I can do 9 days of teaching. We go from 9 in the morning till 10 at night with breaks for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and, you know, just to chill out too. But I mean, I know a lot of stuff, and I've studied with a lot of people, and, you know, the main thing that for me about sound, it says make a joyful noise in the Bible. We're talking about the Bible, right? It says make a joyful noise. And I think that, at least for myself, I don't believe that in order to be sacred, you have to be solemn. I think you can have
I agree with that. I think you can be happy in the sacred.
I mean, I think you can have just a real... Yeah, exactly, you know? It's like, you know, if you're real bummed out, it doesn't mean God or Goddess loves you anymore.
God's music to make things... That music of the spheres, you know, make things harmonize. I don't think the planets would spin very well without sound, you know? I think we'd all crash into each other.
Oh, my goodness gracious,
A little, you know? Well, I'll say one thing. You look in your... You know, there's like the people out there listening. I'm looking at the chakra chants. There's just all this stuff. You put a book in here. There's a picture of
it. Yeah, I did.
This is good. I like, by the way, I saw some pictures of you when you were a veteran cosmic rocker at about 25 years old, and you were a hot looking dude, man. Still
are. Where did you find those?
I got my spies out there, you know.
Oh,
you were
my
a real
goodness
rocker.
Gracious.
Yeah, you know, you're a person of interest. But I like you got the bowls, you got the things that you use, you got the vowels and all of the words here. I mean, the people out there listening, you really need to get this music. And I know it's not that expensive, and this is something that'll set you free. When you hear his music, and I've been playing some of it. I played it all night the other night. You know, I just went to bed listening to it, which means it's a double A list. You know.
Yeah. You, so you were listening.
Like, yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
You were listening then to the Lost Chord, which is sort of a follow up.
Yeah.
The Chakra Chance, and I think Chakra Chance is about probably somewhere between 32 and 40 different simultaneous tracks that are going. I use probably anywhere from a dozen or more different systems of sound healing that are going with each chakra. And then I said, okay, well, this is great. Now what can I do? And I thought, well, okay, let's see if we can make a journey not only through the chakras but through the Kabbalistic tree of life. And for the your listeners who don't know, the word Kabbalah is it's the Judeo-Christian mystic tradition.
Yeah.
And there was a really lovely being by the name of Carolyn Mace who basically somehow put a relationship between the chakras and the planes of the Tree of Life and put them together, and I just looked at it and I said, yep, that's right. And I then created this this journey through the chakras and the Tree of Life, and it's all based upon, for those of your listeners who have ever read the Da Vinci Code, they've heard of the Fibonacci series.
Right, exactly. We make a nuclear receptor with pyramids laid out. The pendant you wear looks like a satellite dish, and the pyramids are laid out in the Fibonacci series.
That's
right. We've got a lot of Fibonacci people out there tonight.
Right, and
yeah, they know what it is.
Yeah, so this recording is all based also on the Fibonacci series, and so everything is based upon Phi. And we start with the ratio. The beginning of the first ratio is 1:1, then 2:1, then 3:2, then 5:8, then 8:13, and it's very, very powerful and wonderful recording.
The way the flowers grow, the pine needles on a pine cone, all that's the order. Yeah.
The way
a shell unfolds, same thing. You know, new people out there don't know what we're talking about. That's what we're talking about. The actual order of unfoldment. Yeah.
Yeah, and there,
that's amazing.
For many people, I tell them that I think it's probably the most powerful sonic Merkaba that is found on the planet. And I know that you had my friend Tom Kenyon may have been on your show last week.
I think he was brilliant. Yeah.
He listened to Lost Chord, and he just flipped out. He just thought
that
it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. He thought it was a cat's pajamas, as I used to say.
Yeah.
Which.
Do you work with him at all, or just see him around, or what?
I see him around. Tom and I have never worked together, but, never say never, because you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, well, you guys in your respective fields are at the very top, and that's really nice, you know?
Yeah, and we're doing a lot of similar things, too. He uses a lot of stuff with the voice. I do a lot of stuff with brainwave and higher consciousness, and we both work with different interdimensional beings, and,
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. He channels Hathor, and then I was a Pleiadian contactee for 22 years with Semyasi, and then I got into the Andromedan side of it, which is another race from the constellation out there. And,
right.
And
I work with a being called Shamael, and you're going, who's Shamael? Well, I don't. Have you ever? So we're talking about the Kabbalah. I don't know if you've ever heard of a being called Metatron.
I have.
But Shamael. Shamael is another name for Metatron, and it's fairly powerful, heavy energy forms here, and I'm just real grateful. Shamael is the angel of sacred sound. So, if you get into the concept that in the many different traditions, life, the universe, and everything, the world was created through sound, and the Lord said, let there be light. In reality, it was probably not the primal creator that made the sound, but the angel. For example, in the Hindu tradition, they say, not a Brahman, the world is sound. But in reality, Brahman creates Saraswati, the goddess, and it's out of her mouth that the sacred Bija mantras come, which create reality. So it's like the creator God creates a helper and then goes out to lunch for a while. in
yeah,
the
exactly.
Judeo
God
Christian.
Lazy, I know that.
Didn't say that
yeah.
one, but that's a good thing I have for lunch. You know, they're having their you know golf mm-hmm. game or whatnot.
I mean, when
and,
you become God, and we all do, I believe at some point in existence, which is forever, and then you get to be that, you'll be lazy too, or burned out by then. Who knows? But you know what? When Yossi was teaching me, you know, a long time ago, back in '71 when we first met, she told me that the Rishis came from Pleiades, and the language over there was very similar to Sanskrit, and they came here 26,000 years ago, and they brought the sitar, because the sitar has the right timbers in it to make energy move in human beings, and of course, then they taught people how to do the raga, which is the movement itself. And so I was really involved in one of Ravi Shankar's sitar players used to live with me part-time in my house, my other house in Laguna. So I used to wake up in the morning about 6, smelling beautiful incense in this beautiful house, and the sitar players playing in the living room. You know, after a day of that, the whole day is like, you could shoot me, and I wouldn't even notice that I was so high from waking up from the very first instant before you have to deal with the dregs of humanity out there in this, as Semyonti says, the ones with the auric stench. I mean, some people that smoke cigarettes, you can smell them a mile away. I mean, imagine everybody getting up in the morning and listening to The Lost Chord or some of your stuff, or putting it in their car and driving to work. I think road rage would disappear. You know, I think car wrecks would drop off. Insurance rates could go down. We should take this to the insurance companies. You know what I mean?
That's
serious. I'm not kidding. I'm kidding, but I'm serious at the same time, you know.
Well, I mean, I think on a level that would be a wondrous thing, not, you know, whether it's my music or someone else's music. I remember, I want to share a little story with you, which was that some years ago I was teaching somewhere and a student was saying, well, I want a mantra for protection against road rage.
I said, listen, I
just don't think that's the right approach to it. So that day we began to work with a Tibetan mantra called Om Mani Padme Hum, which
right.
is to generate compassion and kindness and love.
Can you chant that?
Sure. Regular voice, Tibetan voice, harmonic voice, how would you like
it? Line of it in the Tibetan voice.
Okay, here we go.
Yeah.
But if you want to just chant in English.
That's so hot. That, ladies and gentlemen, that's live. That's not recorded.
You know, in English, it would just simply be, Om Mani Padme Hum. So we're doing this chanting for about a half hour, an hour, and everybody, just in a regular, normal voice, and everybody gets stoned out because, you know, very, very spaced out, because that's what happens when you begin to chant and work with sacred energy forms, whether it's from the Hindu, Tibetan, Hebrew, or Christian tradition. It's, you know, as soon as you begin to invoke and bring in the energy of divine beings, it's just very, very powerful. So, and sound is the single most powerful tool when it's used in a sacred manner. But I'm digressing. So we had done Om Mani Padme Hum. And the next
now,
day
now I'm going to ambush you. You ready for your ambush? First ambush?
I got to finish the story, Fred.
Hey, go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So the next day she comes in and she says, when I left the workshop, I was driving down the road and there was a guy in front of me and he was driving really erratically. He was weaving in and out of traffic and I thought that he was going to get into an accident. And I began to chant Om Mani Padme Hum and send it to him. And she said within 1 minute, he just pulled over and he drove normally.
Wow.
And
so
I thought, now that's the approach. Not to be in fear and needing protection, but projecting consciousness and kindness to other people. Okay, I'm ready for my ambush.
Oh, yeah. Dolphin dreams. Talking to dolphins. Hello. What do you got to say about that?
Well, by golly. You know, if you look on the cover of Dolphin Dreams, there is the picture of an illustration of Sirius, the star, which is, you work with the Pleiadians, I work with the Syrians.
That's where Chris is from, right? The blue-skinned guy?
Well,
you think
you know.
What's your opinion on that?
I don't know.
Okay. So anyhow, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt. you know, you're on a crazy show. So, anyway, tell us about Dolphin Dreams. It's fabulous.
Well, you know, it was basically really just, this is one that was created a long time ago for the birth of my son, where I was contemplating actually moving either to, you know, the Soviet Union or New Zealand to have a dolphin-assisted water birth.
And, wow.
You know,
is that your son in the picture there?
No, it's just that was actually drawn by a Russian scientist that I met who had actually worked with Igor Tarkovsky, the man who pioneered dolphin-assisted water births. But shortly after I had that, you know, concept of you know, having a dolphin-assisted water birth, I realized I was way too lazy to move anywhere. You know?
Yeah.
But my inner guidance said, you know enough about sound where you can create a sort of sonic soup, where you can create what would be called the morphogenetic field, the energy field of a dolphin-assisted water birth. And I began to, you know, within minutes, make phone calls, and this woman who used to work with Dr. John Lilly had actually recorded the sounds of dolphins opening up her heart center, and all this stuff just came together. And it's really interesting. Dolphin Dreams is the first album, CD, that was commercially available that featured the sounds of dolphins. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that. I know that I've sampled dolphin sounds and used them on my synthesizer. I had no idea I'm talking to the person that did that.
Well, it was the first commercially available, and those sounds actually came from Dr. John Lilly, who you remember the movie Day of the Dolphins?
Yeah. I met John Lilly a long time ago, back in the 80s,
An amazing man. I was at a birthday party for him once. But anyway, so Dolphin Dreams is one that I still love. And did we send you a copy of Holy Harmony?
No, I don't even have Dolphin. Yeah, I got Holy Harmony. Yeah, I got that. I didn't get Dolphin Dreams though, but I'm looking at it in the thing, in the Frequencies thing. That's what I've been.
Yeah, well, you know, there's an excerpt from it in Frequencies. So if you like it, just you know, let me know and I'll send you more. Holy Harmony, because I noticed on your website that you probably have talked to Dr. Len Horowitz a bit.
Oh, Laura, I've known him for 20 years. Yeah, I was my original lecturing about Langley and 1975 and the Bovine and cattle virus marriage that created AIDS that got him going to school to prove me wrong, and he found out that I was right. We go back, but he was just a student, you know.
So you're the guy to blame, huh?
Well, yeah, I'm the guy that really screwed him up. I was 20 years with the National Health Federation, traveling all over the place, including overseas, and that, you know, doing all this stuff. And nobody, I had my radio show I did in 1984. I was talking about what was going to happen in Iraq, and I was talking about dirty bombs, and I was talking about terrorism and World Trade Center. Everybody thought I was nuts. But now in the BBS archives, my 1984 show, which was over at KFOX in L.A., they now can hear me because I pulled the archives out and put them on the archives. They can hear me talking about the stuff that goes on today.
It was
The other thing is, did you see the Pyridine logo? It's very similar to your cover here, except there's a girl. Huh? That's a Pyridine logo. It's a dolphin, a girl swimming, and the ocean in the background, and it's arranged in a triangle, like a pyramid. That's our company logo. So you hit a nerve on that one.
No. You know, Fred, it's just all too synchronistic. But, you know, see, and this is one of the things that, you know, your listeners and just hopefully, you know, as we begin to wake up and really realize the oneness of all these, quote, synchronistic experiences, these things, these similarities between us really become more and more self-evident. And, I mean, this is one of the more extraordinary things about sound. Is that
we're all sound sandbox buddies from past existence, I think. What do you think?
Mm-hmm.
We all hung out in the sandbox. You know,
in the sandbox, right.
Yeah, when we were kids, you know. You know, kids in maybe a thousand-year-old in body and in the sandbox somewhere, you know.
Mm-hmm. But,
yeah,
you know,
no,
we can...
I have to say, Dave up there putting this show together, I'm really connecting with some, you know, really cool people, because I've been 15 years off the road. You guys have been out doing, you're beating the bushes down. I've been recluse back here in Laguna for 15 years. I'm just coming up with a new book and some new music and going back out again. And it's really great to come out and meet you and all the other presenters that I'm having on my show. You guys are all brilliant. You guys have, you know, in the last 15 years, miracles have been happening, you know?
Well, you know, I mean, for Dave, I have to just really applaud him because, you know, I've been in this field for close to 30 years, and one of the fellows who is going to be out at the World Sound Healing Conference by the name of Jeff Volk, he used to put on conferences similar to this, but he would have maybe 30 teachers altogether.
30, yeah. We got several hundred coming to this one already.
And, you know, and Dave's got, like, everybody in the world. It's like, whoa!
Oh, yeah.
And it just
we almost got the Moody Blues to come, but Justin, he's down there. He built that place down in Sur-Lamar in France, and you got to pry him out of there. He used to come, him and John Lodge would have come out as the Blue Jays, and they just got to pry him out. They just got too laid back, you know, and I was hoping Katara wouldn't show up. But we have a lot of I guess Crosby, Stills, and Nash might even be there. You know, I've heard that they live up there. It'd be a good place for them to go.
Well, I think that Jimi Hendrix is reincarnating for that very, very special night. I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, yeah, that'll be really good.
A little tongue-in-cheek there. But
you really play that bad guitar like he did, that bad, what I call badass sound, you know, the Hendrix sound. You know, I like that stuff. I can do that with synthesizers, you know. And I could play a clarinet like that, but I never could do it on a guitar.
How about a kazoo?
That would be. I've never played one of those. I only played woodwinds.
That's just really funny. You know, for your listeners who are there, I am. You know, I just want them to know that you know, Dr. Fred and I are sort of having a really good time. You know, talking with each other, but you know, really, this work with sound—it's a lot of fun, but it's also. Also, just really profoundly transformative to the degree that I was speaking with a friend of mine who is a Hindu Swami, and he was talking to me. He said, you know, you've literally touched millions of people with your words, with your teaching, and with your music, and you've changed and shifted them. And I said, well, you know, you're saying that to me today. I said, that's probably, you know, there's some truth to that. And I like to believe that we're going to be able to keep going with this because the fastest, most powerful, and just really easiest way that people can really reawaken to their sense of higher being, to their sense of who they are and what they're here for, and to the sense that we are all one, is by working with sound. I mean,
yeah,
Fred, you know this, and it's just...
Yeah, when I asked it one day, because in my book, Rays of Truth, I don't know if you've ever seen that one or not, I haven't even sent the books out, I promised everybody.
you promised me one, and I'm waiting for it.
I'm going to send you a bunch of stuff. I'll take care of it. It's just been crazy around here, getting ready for this thing, I run a big company, and it takes a lot of my time. But,
sure.
Sannyasi told me that the spaceships were sound-powered and light-separated, and that's when I was learning, you know, how these beam ships, that they're sound-powered, light-separated. And then I wrote about the propulsion systems, which you'll see. The other thing is, real quick, before I ambush you again, we only got about 6 minutes. Tell people how, because a lot of people out there don't have computers. A lot of people are listening on the radio, you know, so they don't have a computer. How can they buy the stuff you're talking? Where can they get these albums? Do they have to go to the record store? Can they get them from you?
Listen, can I give a telephone number over the phone?
Yeah, give all the phone numbers, give websites, anything you want. Just tell.
Okay,
them
well, listen, everybody get your pens and pieces of paper, because here's the 800 number.
Yeah.
It's 800-246-9764. 800-246-9764. So that's the telephone number, and then the website, and a lot of people are on, is www.healingsounds, that's sounds, it's plural, sounds with an S at the end, .com, www.healingsounds.com. If you don't put the S on the end and you just do healing sound, it'll take you to the website of a Hindu Swami, not my friend. And I'm sure his sounds are wonderful, but it's not me. I am not the bearded man in the robe. I do have a beard, but it's short, it's well-trimmed, and I don't usually wear a robe. So it's www.healingsounds.com.
You're the spandex guy.
Yeah. People, you know, Fred, people can also get my stuff at Borders, Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, that type of thing, you know?
The last thing, because we only got about 4 minutes in the left, the divine name, and I just want to read what you say here. Read it. This is right on the front cover of the Divine Name, Sounds of God Code. This is another music album by Jonathan Goldman. It says, rediscover the personal name of God from the original Kabbalah. Now you can experience the power mystery and the healing of the Divine Name. And you've got charts. Everything you've got is charts and all kinds of brilliance. So explain that album a little bit. I know you touched on it a little earlier on the Da Vinci Code mention, but go a little bit more into it. This is brilliant. You've even got Hebrew in here, and you could probably got a it's like a Course in Miracles in this thing, you know.
Gosh, I need a half hour, but I'm going to try to do it in 2 minutes. Okay. Bottom line is that I basically work with a system of using vowel sounds to resonate the chakras, going up the chakras from the root to the crown. One night, I actually awoke. One morning, I woke from a dream, and I was guided to basically make these sounds going from the crown using the vowel sound and then back up. And I did, and I found that it sounded very much like this ancient name for God. And I'll do a little sound for those of you here right now, and we'll do this just for to shift and change you.
A good one. That's a high frequency job. That was a good one.
And it's all composed of vowels. And I see that people throughout the planet could make this sound. And it's non-denominational, and it is not related to any specific tradition, really, because it's just working with the vowel sounds. And yet it doesn't have any of the separating consonants, so that people throughout the planet could make the sound, feel the energy going down through the top of their head, going down into the body, and then back out, and through this realize the oneness that we all have. So I think it's an extremely, extremely powerful sound. The album is called The Divine Name, but it's something that people can learn to do. And it's so interesting you should mention that, because I was talking just last night about it, and I have a thought that it may be the sound that is going to unite the planet.
Yeah, I think it might, you know. And by the way, I've gotten feedback up here on the chat room. I haven't really responded to too much of it, but everybody seems to really like your show tonight, like having you on there. I got a lot of thank yous for bringing you on.
Well, thank everyone for listening to me.
Are you going
to
come back on here again after the conference? Because you and I can cut loose some more, you know. I can get more.
Fred, we got so much to talk about. It would be a great honor and a great privilege. And I just want to thank you so much for this opportunity. This conference is going to be quite extraordinary. With all these different teachers, and just the whole realm of using sound as a healing modality is really blossoming. As I said, I've been in this field for 30 years, and in the last 5 years, things have just, you know, the seeds that have been planted have now begun to grow in the tree.
Yeah, we're down to the last few seconds now. I noticed in your book on figure one, and then you got oxygen, hydrogen, nitrogen, and carbon. I start my lectures out with that. We'll get into that conversation later. We got about 30 seconds. So could you give us a nice chant out, and then the program will be terminated with your last sound. So I'll hang up, and you'll be cut off at about 30 seconds. But could you chant us out, give us that going out chant?
Here we go. Nice little chant for a higher consciousness.
Thank you, by the way,
more light. Here we go. Here we go.
Okay. Jonathan Goldman, we'll have you on soon. That's one of the best shows I think we've ever had.
Thank you, Fred. Many blessings.
Bye.
Bye-bye.